Hello, everyone. You're listening to In the Weeds, an agriculture podcast hosted by Monica Jean and the Michigan Field Crops team.
All right, we're recording. I'm going to get it started then. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another In the Weeds with Monica Jean here in the Michigan Field Crops team. I think y'all know me, but I'll introduce myself just in case this is the first one you've found. I am a field crops educator from Michigan State University Extension, and I work in the Saginaw Bay. I have this great privilege of working with a lot of awesome colleagues. I have one of those here today, John Laporte. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Sure, Monica. John Laporte. I am in the southwest region of our state. I work in the field of farm business management. And so I often people kind of talk about the dollars and cents of farming. I cover about 10 counties in the southwest area, do a lot of different projects with various groups, including members of the field crops team that Monica's part of, and happy to be here today.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And John, you brought a farmer. We love talking to farmers on here. Dave, thank you. Thank you for joining us. Very excited to talk about this kind of like economic philosophy that you've developed on the farm. Do you mind giving us just a little introduction about who you are, where you're located, or what kind of farm you have?
Sure, Monica. We moved onto our farm in fall of 1977. So this year we're harvesting our 46th crop. So we've been at it for quite a few years. I had jobs in town. I have a PhD, so I'm reasonably educated. So I was working off the farm all the time. My wife did much of the work on the farm, although she's an educated teacher as well. But we always felt that, or at least we concluded very early on that the farm needed to pencil out if we were going to keep it, because it's a lot of work and it takes a lot of time and energy away from other things we might do. So even though it's a small operation, we've made it work for many years and hopefully can do it another couple of years, but we are getting up in age a bit now, so we have to decide to move it on to someone else at some point.
You look like a young, spry man. I don't know what you're talking about, Dave. What kind of farm do you have, Dave?
Now we just have corn and soybeans. We had a hog operation, a small farrow-to-finish hog operation for many years, about 45 sows. And when the hog market went through a very low point in the later 90s, we decided to quit doing it. We needed to replace a building, and we didn't want to make that investment. So we switched just to corn and soybeans, like a lot of other farmers do. And I told my wife when we did that, it was going to be hard to make it this pencil out, because they're just commodities and we wouldn't be selling them every 2 weeks like we did the hogs. But we made it work.
Cool. We're going to talk about how you did that a little. I do want to ask, on the farm, do you use conventional tillage, or what kind of tillage practices do you use?
No, we had used conventional tillage up until about that time, although I had started doing soybeans no-till several years before. But I think we bought our first no-till corn planter in 98 and used it for the first time in 99. And we've been complete no-tillers since then. I still have a chisel plow, and I don't care if I ever hook onto it again, but I keep it just in case I need it.
Yeah, you get some really bad weed that just got to bury.
Right.
And then do you guys use any cover crops or any field of edge conservation?
We do cover crops on soybean ground when the weather in fall and the harvest permits. So this year is going to be a difficult year. I have the cover crop rye seed, but And the drill is full and hooked up and ready to go and all greased, but the soybeans aren't off yet. So hopefully we can get them in before November 1st so that on most of the soybean ground from this year. I haven't put any cover crop on corn ground because typically it's just too late unless I find a way of flying on the seed or something like that. Haven't done that yet.
Okay, great. I just like to get an idea of, we talk about expenses, you know, what you're running there so that people can understand what you're spending your money on and, you know, what you got going on. So
sure.
I really loved that your wife sounds like the boss. I think that's a great way to run a business, is that a woman should be in charge.
I think we would both say we're partners.
Yeah. Okay. All right. This is an off note though, but that's really cool to hear you.
But yes, she's a very active part of it.
That's awesome. I would love to meet her sometime. She sounds cool. Can you talk a little bit about how you and your wife, as you've created this wonderful sounding farm, how do you operate and manage it, make those decisions in that 45 plus years you've been working together? Do you guys have like a guiding principles that you work off of, or how do you do that?
Well, we're both fairly conservative spenders, and we talk through all the major decisions that we make. Before I buy a piece of equipment, it's never a surprise for her. It's always talked through. And we have a policy that we don't want to subsidize the farm with personal money. We keep our personal money completely separate. We have separate checking accounts and separate savings accounts. And over time, I'd say in the last 35 to 40 years, we probably loaned a little money to the farm from the personal side, I think twice, but it's very unusual. And we want the farm to pencil out and be able to cover all the expenses and have enough cash flow so that we don't have to borrow to operate at all.
Okay.
And we managed to do that.
I think that's probably critical to having an agreement, is you've got that core guiding principle there.
Yeah.
Is that common, John, or do you feel like with the people you work with,
I would say it's not as common to have the, where you've got the separation quite as much as what Dave and his wife has been able to achieve. I think that's something everybody wants to try to do. The separate checking account is very common. Trying to make sure that the farm is self-sufficient is very common. But I think one of the differences in why I wanted to kind of talk to Dave today was the fact that he's found some real success in doing this, that everyone starts off with a goal. They want to kind of have everything separated, but being able to do that a lot of the time is kind of difficult. And I think there's some tips and tricks in terms of how Dave goes about it that people can learn from to kind of help them kind of get the direction to kind of follow that same pathway to kind of get that achieved.
Yeah. I'm guessing that's probably how you decide, like how you create your plan on the farm. So do you guys do annual planning? Have you set goals that's how it's helped you develop this system? How have you gone about planning to do all this?
Well, each year I have a crop plan and I just happen to bring it along. It's a big spreadsheet. It's got so much on it that the print is getting kind of small for my old eyes now. But, we do the crop plan each year and I revise it as the months go on if I have to. But it's got everything on it from our crop history and all the fields we farm, some of which are owned, some of which are rented. It has the population that we plant at. It calculates how much fertilizer we need, how much herbicide based on We take advantage of the past year's soybean nitrogen credit for reducing nitrogen on corn acres the next year, on the soybean last year's soybean acres. So yeah, we do a plan like this every year, and of course, in order to try to take advantage of the economic side, the seed companies typically have a really nice credit for buying seed early and committing in fall. But that requires two things. One, it requires that you have a plan for what you're going to plant next year and how much seed you're going to need. And two, it requires a pretty hefty cash flow so that you can write a pretty big check in fall. And we've been doing that for quite a number of years. And we've got enough nitrogen storage, so we buy our nitrogen, our 28% early. And we have a chemical containment facility to store the nitrogen tanks in. And, you know, we try to do things environmentally right, but yet in a relatively cost-efficient way.
So it sounds like you do an annual plan. You revise your plan annually. And then this long-term plan you're working towards is just like this financial independence.
Right. And I should perhaps give a little proviso that when I said we make the farm pay for itself, I do have to admit that we did use personal money to purchase the acres. We didn't, we moved here for the job that I had, not for the farm. And we lived in the city for a number of years. When we purchased the farm, that was personal money. And other land that we have purchased since then has been personal money.
Okay.
But once we pay for the land, then the rest is farm money to operate the farm. And I think in hindsight, I think the last time we bought land, you know, the farm made the mortgage payments too until we had the mortgage paid off. We don't mind doing that, but we do use personal money for that.
One of the things that Dave does is he puts together a annual review or a financial analysis of the farm and kind of looks back where the history is. And that's kind of one of the things in his annual plan that I know working with him, he kind of looks back to see how has the farm kind of been profit-wise, been production-wise, to kind of give him a good idea of what exactly he can use for some expectations going forward. And so that's one of the things that I think I really is interesting is that, Dave, you look at not just the whole version of the farm, though, you look at each individual crop, too.
Correct. Correct. And one of the things that we needed to improve about 7 or 8 years ago was on the revenue side. Since we're selling commodity crops, our corn and soybeans aren't worth any more than any other farmers typically. I was spending a lot of time trying to monitor the market on a regular basis and printing off copies of futures prices and current prices almost on a daily basis. Well, that took a lot of time, and I was doing fairly well in marketing, but we decided to sign up with a consulting service that provides suggestions on opportune times to sell or market corn and soybeans. And that's been very helpful because it saves a lot of time, and their results are probably a little bit better than the ones I had. So we do whatever we can. We don't mind using other people's good tools and advice.
Yeah. Good wisdom, right?
Right.
Well, that sounds like, you know, using a marketer sounds like a way to kind of diversify or find an added value. If you can't increase your amount of acreage, right, how do you get more out of that land? And if you can provide a service that increases your revenue.
But just to clarify, we use them for their predictions for when is a good time to consider selling. we don't use them to actually do any of the marketing. So we still make all the decisions. We work with our local buyers too. And we decide when to sell and when not. We got a call the other day from, or not a call, a text from our grain buyer at Anderson's suggesting that Albion would really like corn now, and they're paying 70 cents over the futures price. But I'm set up to do soybeans. I don't want to put the corn head on and switch the combine over. So we'll pass on that opportunity.
Okay. So is that idea of like using someone's knowledge to kind of help you with your marketing then, is that what some of the diversification you've done on the farm to help with revenue?
Yes, that has been very helpful, I think, on revenue. And Roche has a pretty significant annual charge. And the first year we signed up, I negotiated with them a little bit and they dropped it down, gave me a little extra deal. The second year they sent me the bill for the full amount. And I said, you know, we're just a small operation. We don't sell that big a volume. So I can hardly afford what your annual charge is. And they reduced it for the second year too. And when the third year's bill came, I thought about it extensively and I decided, no, I made at least that much money on the information they provided. So I've been paying the regular standard annual.
Ever since. Yeah. That's nice. You found the value in it.
Right.
Do you do anything else on the farm to help diversify your guys's revenue streams or increase farm revenues?
Well, we always sell part of our crop on futures contracts. We sell some of the corn when it's in June or July, when it's only a couple feet tall in the field. And we do the same with some soybeans. With soybeans, we don't have enough storage for the whole crop. So I have to sell one truckload early, and I always do that. Sometimes I contract more depending on what the market looks like it's going to do. I've found these last few years of markets rather challenging because, you can't predict when Russia's going to invade Ukraine and what's going to happen to prices. And so it's difficult to work in markets where they're either going up very rapidly or down very rapidly and fluctuating a lot. But we've done reasonably well in spite of the challenges.
We've navigated that. Does that go back to your core principles maybe? Or what do you think what's your special sauce there? Like, what are you doing to be able to navigate those times?
Well, I'm not sure how to answer your question because, our core principle is that the farm needs to pencil out. There needs to be some money left over after we pay all the expenses and bring in the revenue. And we don't like a year when there isn't anything left over. That hardly ever happens. So even in a year when prices are low, hopefully inputs are purchased efficiently enough that we still come out with at least not a very significant loss. And most of the time it's a small profit. Sometimes it's a fairly significant profit.
So Dave, you mentioned the discounts. You also have storage. When you're looking at on the buying side, and especially with there's usually that trend following where you've got the markets are going up, the price, the input costs are going up, and then markets go down, the inputs, they trail and they eventually come down with them. Right. But you mentioned things like discounts and storage. How do those type of things impact some of the things you look at when you're looking on the buying side of things?
Well, on the buying side, for example, for corn and soybean seed this year, the discount is 12%. If you can pay by mid-October. Well, 12%, you'd have to buy it next spring anyway, 6 or 8 months later. So 12% to save money for 6 or 8 months is more like 20% interest on your money. So you really need to plan to have the cash available to do that. With nitrogen, typically 28% is almost always, not completely always, but almost always cheaper in fall because farmers aren't using much in fall. And what's sitting in storage, they just as soon empty out so that they can produce it during the winter for spring use. So usually we can get a truckload of 28%, at a price that's significantly better than it would be in waiting for spring. But again, that does require having a cash flow balance big enough so you can write a check for at least a five-figure number, even on our small farm.
Or maybe using I know some cases there's a financing option for folks that maybe are out there too. So either way, managing the money to make those investments and secure those are pretty important. Mm-hmm. That's something you and I have talked about, is trying to make sure you've got those locked in as you go into the next year.
Right. But we do have the storage for grain, and we have the storage for nitrogen fertilizer. And those are both part of the efficiency of the operation. With the storage for the crop, you have a lot more flexibility in when you sell. If you can keep it on the farm, you aren't paying storage off site. Typically, when I do a forward contract on corn, it's a December futures contract. But since the corn is in storage and I don't need the storage for anything else, I can roll that contract forward and usually gain a few more cents on the contract too, and sell it in March or April or May or something like that.
So we keep talking about this method you have, and I've heard John referred to it as the low cost method of farm planning. How did you first discover it, and how did you decide it was like the right thing for you guys?
Well, when we eliminated our hog operation and just went to field crops, I went to a number of educational meetings on farming. Crop farming particularly. And one of the educators that I heard had a quite different message than what I usually heard from the fertilizer dealer that I typically bought nitrogen and potash and phosphorus from. They talked about microbes in the soil, and this was in the later 90s, when most people weren't talking about that yet. They were talking about replenishing whatever you take out of the soil by the crop, and not recognizing that the microbes in the soil make some of that stuff available, so you don't have to add it all back in. So that's where we started some of the efficiency improvements. I started using a pop-up fertilizer on the seed, went to no-till planting, and interestingly enough, learned after a few years that the earthworms do a lot of our work for us, because they carry the trash on the top that they consume back into the soil. And a funny thing happened. We purchased some ground about 3 or 4 years after we went to no-till. And my wife at that time, since I worked in town, was doing quite a bit of the farming. So she was getting soil samples on all of our fields. And she did it first on the farms, fields that we had farmed for years, 3 or 4 years, no-tilling, and poked the probe in, and it went in fine. And then she went into the field that we had just purchased and had not farmed, but it had been tilled year after year after year, and she had a tough time poking the probe in. And she said, I was really surprised at you know, the difference in tilled soil versus no-till soil, because the earthworms make all those little tunnels to do their thing, and they need to live too. And between them and the microbes, there's a lot of stuff that happens in the soil that we need to take advantage of.
It's hard not to laugh a little bit, Dave, because what I'm hearing is a lesson you learned 30 years ago is a thing that I'm still teaching today as practice this week.
I know. Okay. It's hard to break old habits.
You're telling me. Oh, goodness. All right. Well, I'm so happy you heard that and learned and like figured out what it meant on your farm with what worked for your guys's.
Yeah. And I might add, you know, our goal is not to have the very highest yields of any of, we're not trying to compete with our farmer neighbors for yields. We're not trying to prove that we can have a better yield than they are. We are trying to prove that there's money left over when we're done. And we are able to farm for about, for fuel usage, we use about 3 gallons of diesel fuel an acre for tillable acre that we farm. And I think most farmers would have a tough time coming to that low a number. But it's because of the way we operate. You know, we do a lot of spraying for herbicides. And, you know, you cover a big acreage with very little fuel when you do that. And pulling steel through soil takes a lot of energy and diesel fuel.
I'm hearing is this low-cost approach of yours has really influenced your practices. I mean, you heard about the microbes and all those, but you also saw the financial savings if you adjusted your production practices.
Right.
So you really analyze how many times you're going across that field as far as...
Typically, a cornfield, we go across 4 times a year. Well, 5 times when you harvest, but 4 times during the growing season. Once to do a burn down, a second time to plant, a third time to do a pre-merge spray. So 2 of those early passes are with a sprayer and a fairly wide boom. And then because of nitrogen leaching potential, I only put on half the nitrogen with the planter, and then I do a side dress when the corn is, you know, roughly 1 foot high, plus or minus a little.
Yeah, that's great. And the no-till is a cost savings is how you pencil that out as well.
Definitely.
That's really great. And so you use a cover crop. You must find a financial benefit to that as well?
Well, it's hard to measure the financial benefit of a cover crop in my mind, but it's the right thing for the soil. We're adding organic matter, and our organic matter is pretty good anyway with the no-till operation, but it adds organic matter, and I do it more because it seems like the right thing to do, and it's not a real expensive operation. It does add another pass in fall after harvest. But when you plant corn the next year, which is what I end up doing in the cover crop after I burn it down, it's strange to look at that field compared to the neighbor's that's tilled, because his corn is up looking nicely. And you can't see anything in my cover crop field that I planted corn in, except that I run some of it down with wheel tracks. But then, you know, the corn comes through and it looks fine, and it helps with weed control as well as providing the organic matter.
Yeah. I'm hearing that for the first couple of years you started that practice, you sweated it out in the spring. That's what I'm hearing. You were like, I hope this crop comes up. Oh, it did. Good. Okay.
Well, it's funny listening to Dave describe that, because Monica, how many times have we talked to producers about looking for those not so obvious cost savings or improvements to the operation that cover crops bring. And yeah, Dave's right. It's hard to pencil out if you're just looking at the cover crop itself. But when you look at all the other benefits that it adds and where it kind of helps in other areas, as Dave's describing, after sweating it out the first couple of years, being able to kind of see how that helps the operation, is that's something we're still talking to people about. And that's something I know Dave was working on that I always thought was kind of interesting, was he's been able to see that, maybe not pencil it out as clearly as you'd like to with just the cover crop, but those added benefits really show up in the rest of the operation.
Yeah.
But it is strange. It gives you a strange feeling when you pull into a field that has a cover crop, even though you burned it down, it's maybe starting to turn brown. If the cover crop, you know, is 12, 15 inches high and you pull in with your planter and start putting seed in the ground, and, you know, it's a funny feeling. You hope the planter doesn't plug up, and you hope it's still planting the seed just fine. And yeah, the monitor says it's going in, but yeah, it's different. You know, you have to be brave, I guess, to try it the first time and see if it works.
I also want to go back to something else you kind of said that struck me, was your yield goal is not the highest bushels per acre. It's that cost of production. It's the break even, right? That you're in the profitable area.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, sometimes I think to try to get that last 10 or 20 bushel of yield off corn or three or four off soybeans, you can spend a lot of money, and in my mind, it we haven't tested a lot of that to see if it would pencil out, but we don't think it would.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to bring in a little bit about technology. You mentioned planting. Do you guys have any use of technology to plant or harvest, or anything, even technology, like how you keep your books? You know, what's your take on technology on the farm and helping you also with this low cost production model?
Well, we use technology a lot, although it isn't always the latest and greatest technology. We're a small operation. We farm 260 acres. We don't have the newest equipment, obviously, because it wouldn't pencil out if we spent $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000 for harvesting equipment, for example. So we have an older machine. It's got an older monitor in. I actually replaced the monitor in my mid-90s combine last year with a little newer vintage monitor. It's still not the latest and greatest, but at least it has the storage technology that I can take out and put in my computer. And yeah, the spreadsheet that I have for crop planning that I held up earlier, you know, that's an Excel spreadsheet. It's fairly complicated. I did it myself. I know how to use it, and it's very helpful to have that. On my spray tractor, I don't have any GPS steering, automatic steering, but I put a GPS, I'm struggling for the right word. I don't remember what word they describe it, but it was the initial kind of GPS assisted device where you could have a little device that's on the right in front of the windshield of the tractor. And it, if you get off your line that you're supposed to be driving on, it says move over 8 inches or whatever. I have that kind of a device on my spray tractor. And when I'm spraying on last year's corn, since I do no-till, it's not a problem because I can just count corn rows. But when I spray on last year's soybeans, and especially because I harvest the soybeans at a little bit of an angle like we're supposed to do, you know, it's hard to follow a straight soybean row, even if they're 15 inches apart. So I use the GPS guide in spraying to help make sure I don't have any misses or overlaps.
Okay.
I also use that when I spread potash with, I move it from tractor to tractor. When I spread potash and use a whirly bird kind of sprayer, a Wilmer spreader, you know, you're supposed to drive on 40-foot intervals. Once again, if you're on corn rows from last year, you can count rows. But if you're on soybean ground, it's really hard to know exactly where 40 feet is. So this little guidance device that I can put in front of me on this, in front of the windshield, helps keep me driving at the right spot. And again, it was a little expensive to purchase first, but since I can move it from tractor to tractor, you know, it has multiple uses.
Is it RTK? Is that what you're using? Real-time?
RTK is newer technology.
I was trying to come up with the right word for the, it's like a light bar or.
Yes, it's a light bar.
The light bar. Correct. There you go. Okay. Light bar.
That's correct.
All right. Yeah,
It's 10 or 15 year old technology.
It's still working though.
It does the trick.
Hey, you know what? There's plenty of farms that I have been to where they have way more technology, but they don't know how to use it. So what good is it? I like that you're using what you have to its 100% potential, right? It is useful for you. It's impacting your production in a very efficient way, right? In a very positive way. And that's what it's supposed to do. So what good is a lot of technology if you're not using it for decision making?
Sure.
So you've got, it sounds like you've got the right fit for technology for your farm. I'm really loving this. So I just want to end with, if there was a person out there, a farmer listening, and they wanted to explore this low cost method of farming, what advice would you give them?
The advice I would give them is get some education on some of the opportunities for looking at how you can run your farm differently. You know, we had to get educated on no-till methods and before we went to no-till. So like I said, we learned about microbes in the soil, and we learned about using pop-up fertilizer on the seed, and we learned about how to modify the corn planter so that it could effectively plant without having tilled soil to work in. And our corn planter is heavily modified. And when I bought a different planter to plant soybeans, I put the same modifications on that our corn planter has. And it's a lot of work and it's fairly expensive. I think we spent about $3,000 or so for parts to modify the soybean planter, which is 11 rows, 11, 15-inch rows. It's small. But it was the right thing to do. It works very well, and the germination is very good with it, with the method we have. So get educated. The best education is not necessarily with people who sell the stuff.
Well, on that note, I mean, I can't fight with that. So on that note, I would like to thank both of you for getting on. I really appreciate it. Dave, I really enjoy having these conversations with farmers, but also thank you for taking the time out of your day to do that.
Thank you, Monica.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Monica.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to In the Weeds, an agriculture podcast hosted by Monica Jean and the Michigan Field Crops team.